Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. Big week this week. We are joined by Dr. Anthony Fauci, the top medical advisor to President Joe Biden, one of the most important decision makers in the country when it comes to coronavirus, coronavirus closures, what our guidelines are. He joins us to talk about California, to talk about where we're at. Should we pause our reopenings? When can we stop wearing masks? What about those vaccine passports? Plus, we have some fun with him, too. We even play an impression of him for him, get his picks on things. It's one of our favorite interviews we've ever done. And a little later on, a conversation with two of our favorite people, Carla Marinucci of Politico and John Myers of the LA Times, about the recall, about Kamala Harris, and both of them share some funny stories. But let's begin with one of the most famous men in the entire country who really needs no introduction. Here is Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Dr. Fauci, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Thank you, Alex. Good to be with you.
All right, let's begin with a conversation about where California is at right now. The Golden State has been more cautious than many other states. First to lock down, still has a mask mandate as compared to other states like Texas, Florida, that are a lot more laxed. Now that we've seen some real results for the last several weeks, how do you assess California's approach and the decision by California's leaders?
You know, the decision to just continue to implement public health measures is a good one. And the reason I say that is that if you look at the country as a whole, we had a very large spike in the winter months, December, January, and into February. And then it started to come down rather sharply. But what's happened right now, it's plateaued at an unacceptably high level. And over the last maybe 2 to 3 weeks, it's inched up. And when I say it, I mean the daily cases have gone from 30 to 40 to 50, and now most recently, over 60,000 a day. That is concerning because that is usually the forerunner of another surge, which we don't want to happen because we're in such good position with the vaccines rolling out in a really good fashion, where we're vaccinating, you know, maybe 3 million people per day. And every day that goes by, we get closer and closer to better control. So we get concerned when, understandably, states want to cut loose, they want to get back to normal, and they pull back a lot on the restrictions. And that just leads to this danger of rebounding.
But California right now is reopening in a pretty significant way. At the same time, we are seeing those case surges in other parts of the country. We haven't seen that yet here in California. And we're learning about all these new variants. Should California maybe pause its reopening right now? Is it too much too soon?
Well, I think they need to be flexible and determine if you start to see a tick up to just pull back a bit. I mean, one of the things that's so important is to make sure that people continue to wear masks, as you see in this shot on the screen right now. The issue of restaurants and bars and things, you know, that can be problematic if people start congregating indoors a bit too much, and then you could get the concern that I'm talking about.
You know, this week we had news that Johnson & Johnson had to essentially toss out 15 million doses of the vaccine because of human error at an American plant. How does that happen? And what does that do to our timetable for vaccinations in this country?
Well, Alex, you answered your own question. It happened because it's human error.
Yeah.
And those things do happen. Thank goodness, none of the doses that were involved in that particular incident have come out of that place and been administered to people in this country. So if people have a concern, oh, did we get a bad batch? No, absolutely not. This was caught in time. It's under investigation by the Food and Drug Administration. And with regard to your question about the timetable, J&J has guaranteed that they will have the 100 million doses to us that they promised by the end of May. So the bottom line answer, this should not interfere with our timetable.
That is good news. Love hearing that. This week, some more good news. The director of the CDC said something that really caught my attention. I want to play that for you and get you to respond.
Our data from the CDC today suggests, that vaccinated people do not carry the virus, don't get sick, and that it's not just in the clinical trials, but it's also in real world data.
So if that is true, that if I'm vaccinated, I can't spread the disease, why then do I have to wear a mask? And does that knowledge change our thoughts about when we can open up?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Alex. And what Dr. Walensky was saying is that the preliminary data that she was talking about strongly suggests that vaccinated people do not spread it. What we're waiting for and what the CDC is waiting for before they pull back on the recommendation of wearing masks, even though you're vaccinated, is a definitive proof of that. And I think it will be coming soon, but we're not there yet. We are getting there quickly, and there are a number of studies that are going on right now that are going to nail that down.
When you say soon, what does that mean? A few weeks, a few months? What are we looking at here in terms of...
It's a good question, Alex, and I can't give you a definitive answer. I know there's one big study on college campuses that started a few days ago that my institute is funding. That will likely take a few months to get a definitive answer to that. But there are other studies that are going on that can actually underscore or confirm what you just heard Dr. Walensky say. So it might be happening before a few months, but I can't guarantee.
And if that is found to be the case, are we essentially looking at 100% reopening then?
That's going to really depend. I mean, there are a few things going on that people should understand. There's the level of vaccination. I mean, if you get the overwhelming proportion of the population vaccinated, that almost certainly is going to be associated with a marked diminution in the level of infection in the community, namely the number of new infections per day. I think you're going to see both of those things happening simultaneously. People being vaccinated and the level going down to a very, very low level. 60,000 new cases in a day is not a low level. We've got to get way down. When we do, Alex, then you're going to start seeing a pretty rapid progression towards what you and I would consider as close to normal.
Well, and there's a question about how to incentivize that, right? There is a discussion now about so-called vaccine passports. That would be, for example, you can't fly unless you show proof of vaccination. Right now, kids have to show proof of vaccination to get into school. Does that make sense scientifically, practically, legally? I mean, what do you think of that concept?
You know, you just gave the three words that have different answers to them. Legally, practically. The fact is, from the standpoint of practicality, there is merit to that. There are a lot of concerns and objections about discrimination for people who don't, or Big Brother looking over you and giving you the right or not to enter into a theater or into a restaurant. It's a very controversial issue right now. But you can understand that there may be individual independent entities, not at the level of the federal government, but there may be some school districts that would say, unless you're vaccinated, you can't get in. Or some places of employment that say, unless you're vaccinated, you can't come in. That's apart from a broad umbrella concern or control by the federal government. I don't think you're going to see a federal government mandate about that. It might be at the local level, though.
Interesting. All right. Well, we like to have some fun on this show as well. And you really have become a preeminent cultural figure. I've got my Fauci on the couch pillow right here that I have in my office. And just a few weeks ago, a comedian named Matthew Friend did an impression of you on our show. I want you to watch it and then assess.
Well, what you need to understand, Alex, is I am so glad to be here right now because I am indoors with no one around me, so I can finally have my mask off my face. I can breathe again. More and more people should be wearing masks, as you know.
So what do you make of that?
You did a great job, Alex.
So what is the weirdest or coolest or most unexpected thing that's happened to you since you've become this sort of newfound cultural figure? A moment of just that was just so surreal for you.
Oh, you know, it There were several of them, but one that I do remember was doing an Instagram with Julia Roberts, you know, one of the most extraordinary, beautiful, and talented actresses, sitting there and having a conversation, you know, in the sense of our being friends, you know? So who would have thought when I was watching A Pretty Woman a couple of decades ago that I'd be sitting down having a conversation with Julia Roberts? She really is an extraordinarily nice person. It's yeah. just, you know, that was very impressive upon me, what a really nice person she was.
You are the new Richard Gere, Dr. Fauci. Before we go, one more fun thing. I know you're a big basketball guy like me. You joined us on our show 9 months ago, and you made this prediction. Who's going to win the NBA Finals this year?
Well, you know, I have to say the Lakers for sure.
You were right. So this year, Lakers are tough. You're a Brooklyn guy. You know, they got a good team going. Who wins the finals?
You know, I still think it's going to be the Lakers, to be honest with you. And I said that, I got a couple of phone calls from Brooklyn saying they're going to disown me because I didn't say Brooklyn, but I still got to go with L.A.
All right, and you're also a huge baseball guy. Opening day this week, that's a moment to celebrate for this entire country. Who do you think wins the World Series?
You know, I get asked this. I have great confidence in the Nats. You know, they had a really bad year last year. They came in last. But remember, in 2019, they were spectacular and won the World Series. So we're going to see a repeat of 2019.
Well, of course, we here in Los Angeles are rooting for a repeat of 2020 when the Dodgers won the World Series.
Our thanks to Dr. Anthony Fauci, and we're grateful for his confidence in the Los Angeles Lakers. Love to hear that. Now to a conversation with two of the best connected, best known political reporters in recent California history. Carla Marinucci is a senior writer for Politico. She writes California's daily Politico playbook, which I encourage you to subscribe to and read every morning. I do. I also subscribe to and read the Essential Politics newsletter done by John Myers of the LA Times, their Sacramento bureau chief. Both of them talk to us about Kamala Harris's upcoming trip and about Jill Biden's trip this week, which didn't go quite as planned. But let's begin with them by talking about the recall. And some good news this week for Governor Newsom.
Welcome, both Carla and John. Carla, let's start with you and your new reporting this week in the playbook about a big fundraising haul for Team Newsom to fight this recall.
That's right. I mean, the governor got a shot in the arm politically as well when you can raise $3.1 million in 2 weeks. That's what his campaign has dragged in from donors all over California, from every county, small dollar donors. That's a big deal. He's coming up on the $4 million that the Republicans have raised since last February. In 2 weeks, they've done that. So that was good news for Newsom. And look, I mean, this kind of money will keep other Democrats from getting into that recall ballot, including Tom Steyer, apparently, who this week announced he is not going to be on the ballot. He was doing some polling, reported, to see if he should be an alternative there. So right now it's looking like with the governor's polls, with that approval rating at 53%, it's going to be an uphill climb for the GOP, particularly with the money he's raising right now, Alex.
And John, where do you see the state of things right now for the Newsom team?
I think Carla's right. I think this was a good poll. I think it was the fourth in a number of good polls that have all shown the recall is under that 50% mark. And I think that's what's really important out of this, is it's one thing to get a recall on the ballot. It's another thing to actually recall that person, that recall the governor, remove him from office. And the governor's supporters seem to be okay. And I also found interesting, Alex, in this PPIC poll that you referenced, is that people have a generally good feeling about where the state is headed and about the pandemic at this point. And those are really key issues if you're deciding whether or not to keep this governor.
Of course, there's only been one successful recall in the history of California, and that is when Gray Davis was recalled. Arnold Schwarzenegger came in. Carla, just this week, you had the one and only interview that Arnold Schwarzenegger has done this year talking about the recall. What did he tell you?
I mean, Schwarzenegger captured lightning in a bottle back then with that recall as being the number one action hero in the world at the time when he ran. Look, that's not going to be repeated. But what he told me is there are a number of parallels in terms of the voter dissatisfaction, the voter anger with politicians at the highest level. He said this is not about party. This is about the people's anger, and that politicians better listen to that anger, or they're going to pay for it. It was interesting that he noted, you know, there is no Schwarzenegger-like character in this recall right now, Alex, but he said, hey, it could happen. He got in very late. There could be a George Clooney, a Brad Pitt, who would get in. And I think most political reporters would say, please, George Clooney and Brad Pitt, get in. That would make it very exciting.
Yeah. And of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger announced on the Tonight Show, but if any of those folks want to announce on The Issue Is, they are welcome to do that. John, you, of course, covered that recall back then and covering the governor now. One of the other things that Arnold Schwarzenegger said to Carla was that really the Governor Newsom's success will all be about how does he handle this pandemic. We see him at all these different press events almost every day in a different city talking about vaccinations. And we're seeing more of a reopening of this state, including indoor events in a couple weeks from now. It seems like the dynamics on that front are changing quite a bit.
I think so, you know, and due respect to the former governor Schwarzenegger, but here's what's different from 2003, is this governor comes in with a reservoir of support that Gray Davis did not have in that one. And there was this sense of one thing after another building and building in that one. And if Newsom is able to keep things pandemic-wise in California where they are improving, that's going to be big for him. But I tell you, Alex, these ideas of these reopenings, and here we hear it on Friday, this moving into indoor venues, limited populations who can go in those, maybe even showing your vaccination to get in the door of a venue, those are going to be helpful for the psyche of Californians. But if the numbers start to go back and we have to shut down some, as obviously some people have talked about, if that could happen, that could be huge for this governor. And so really, it is live or die politically, I think, on the plight of the pandemic in California.
And of course, Dr. Fauci telling us earlier on this very episode of The Issue Is that we may have to consider pausing our reopening here in California. Next week, Vice President Kamala Harris will be back in her old stomping grounds of Oakland. Back with two people who have covered Kamala Harris in so many different jobs for a whole lot of years. John Myers of the LA Times, Carla Marinucci of Politico. John, what do you expect to hear from the vice president in California? This is her first major speech in California as vice president. What do you make of her performance so far in the job?
First, let's say, what do I think she's doing here? I mean, gosh, I don't know. Why do you need to come to California where you've got everybody a fan already? I think that, you know, the vice president coming to Oakland, I feel like his symbolism as much as anything, this is the beginning of her story, her amazing arc, her political career from prosecutor to attorney general to presidential candidate to vice president of the United States. It's a tough job. No one, you know, there are all the famous sayings about that the vice presidency isn't worth a warm bucket of spit. That's the TV version of the old saying from the 1940s. You know, it's what you make of it. And so far, she's clearly a very hands-on partner with President Biden. And so I think she's going to talk about the Biden-Harris agenda when she's back. And I bet she's going to get a huge audience, huge support for that, because it is her home base of Oakland.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to remember a vice president that was literally in the frame of almost every single shot when you think of this administration so far, Carla. But now she's got a very tough job that Joe Biden has given her, which is to basically be in charge of what's happening in the border for a Democrat. That may not be the job that you want.
Boy, this is politically treacherous waters that she has been thrown into by Joe Biden, Alex, in terms of, I mean, this is the biggest headache, the biggest challenge for the administration, let's face it. And it's, by the way, it's a challenge that Joe Biden got as vice president. That's how long this has been going on. There's only so much that the White House can do on people coming across the border. This is coming in waves. But the bottom line is, you know, Harris has to go in there and take on a diplomatic portfolio. That is new for her. The White House has stressed she's not a border czar. She's not the immigration czar. But the bottom line is Republicans are going to target her on this. They're going to try and hurt her chances in 2024 or 28, whenever it is. She is the leading contender. There's no doubt about it. So a lot riding on it for her. And when you talk about the numbers that have now come across the border, twice as many younger immigrants than in the month before, the Biden administration does have a problem on its hands. it's a very, very tricky challenge for Kamala Harris to take on at this point.
And John, politically, at least so far, it seemed like Kamala Harris has been an easier target for Republicans than Joe Biden has been.
Well, there's a caricature of Kamala Harris, right, that went through the presidential campaign that President Trump, former President Trump, tried to lay out, that other Republicans tried to lay out. I don't know that it has stuck so far. I mean, although I do think that people kind of feel like they know where she's coming from. But I want to talk about the immigration thing just for a moment, if I can, just because look at this state. And that poll that we talked about the recall also had other questions in it this week, that statewide poll, that again reminding us that Republicans in this state, as well as Democrats, of course, and independents, want a pathway to citizenship. They have long supported it. California has been leading that conversation. And again, among Republicans, if I was the Harris people, they don't need my advice, I'd look for a good Republican in California who could embrace this idea of a pathway to citizenship, which is what the Biden administration wants to do. Who knows, maybe Arnold Schwarzenegger's dance card's empty, but someone there can lead that conversation, and maybe that's part of the California story that she can take east.
All right. Well, that would be interesting to find a Republican who's willing to go do that right now, but we'll see. Maybe the governor. Before we go to break, we want to show you something that caught our attention this week. Look at this picture of the Biden cabinet, all in their masks, socially distanced. You feel like this is going to be in the history book of a very strange moment in American history.
So say it with me. Si, se puede.
It is funny every single time I hear it. So, how does that happen? Back with us is Carla Marinucci from Politico and John Myers of the LA Times. I mean, can you imagine what the staffers must have been thinking, John, when that happened?
I mean, and to just stand there in real time and probably had it phoneticized on something. And it's human. Oh, well.
Yeah, it's you. We all make mistakes. God knows I've pronounced things wrong over the years as well. John, I'm wondering, you've spent so many years reporting in the field and seen a lot of crazy things over the years. What is the most embarrassing moment that you've witnessed in politics over the years?
Well, the winner for me, at least in this category, is going to be me doing an interview with Bill Simon, who was the Republican candidate for governor in 2002. I don't know who it was embarrassing for, Alex, but I'll let you decide when I tell it. It was 2003. He lost the 2002 gubernatorial race horribly to Gray Davis. I asked him at a state Republican Party convention, I was interviewing, I was in radio then, had my microphone, and I said, what do you say to Republicans who think you brought the ticket down this past fall? And as I asked him that question, we were walking by the men's room in the hotel. He took a left turn, walked into the men's room, left me standing there with his wife and the microphone in my hand. I waited outside the door, and then I continued the question when he came back. I decided not to follow him
in. Oh, you didn't follow him in. Well, maybe that was a metaphor for the way that things were going for him politically, walking into the bathroom. That's quite something. Thanks for that image, John. Carla, what about you?
Mine involves Schwarzenegger. I was pushing for a big interview with him from Paris. He was at an international conference. The call came in at 5 a.m. I answered it excitedly, and I realized it was a FaceTime call. I had no makeup on. I looked like the Bride of Frankenstein with a fuzzy pink robe on. And I heard silence. And then the trademark voice that said, Carla, you look so becoming. That was
One time when I was interviewing Senator Dianne Feinstein, I was so nervous because we were supposed to do it outside and they moved it inside right away. And I had all this long underwear on in Washington and was sweating so badly that she pulled me into a second office to wipe me down.
Let me get you some Kleenex.
Hold on a second. Okay.
Well, here, give this to me, please.
Yeah. Oh, gee, this is good.
Okay. I was like, she said, you'll never forget this. And I said, nope, never will. Now, before we go for this week, a quick programming note. Next week, we got quite the panel here on The Issue Is. Progressive attorney Gloria Allred will be with us, former White House communications director Anthony Scaramucci, and conservative commentator Alicia Krauss of The Daily Wire. That will be a conversation you will not see anywhere else. One last thing, guys, as we go, in the honor of The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, which used to end episodes with its moment of zen every week, there's no doubt what our moment of zen is this week. So, Director Francis, can you play it? Yes, you can.
So say it with me. Si se puede.
We're so grateful to Carla and to John and also to Dr. Anthony Fauci. Pretty crazy to have him on the show this week as well. Next week, big show, Anthony Scaramucci, Alicia Krauss, and also Gloria Allred. Some of our favorite guests will be back with us. Until then, I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks for listening. Hope you'll connect with me in social media. And I hope you'll subscribe and let other people know about our podcast. Have a great week.